That's interesting because sometimes you think you're doing something new. Ah, this time I will do a new piece, totally new. I stop with all this old stuff that I'm dealing with. I start a new way in my work, but in the end, you realize you're doing the same thing again.
This is the Sparkcast, a bi-weekly show where we explore the creativity, technology, and business of CG. I'm your host, Marina Antunes.
Justine Amard is a visual artist whose career is a mix of relentless innovation and defiance of the art world's conventional boundaries. Her story isn't just about creation. It's a narrative that charts her evolution as an artist who integrates the realms of technology, dance, and music into a symphony of digital and physical installations that have captured the international stage. In this episode, Justine shares her creative process, revealing how she finds harmony in the cacophony of virtual reality, coding, and augmented reality. Her collaborations with scientists, from the depths of the archaeological discoveries to the peaks of neuroscience, are not merely a fusion of disciplines, but a dance where art and science elevate each other. Justine's reflections on inspiration, drawn from the elegance of natural systems to the intricate world of Japanese robotics, serves as a beacon for anyone navigating the creative landscape. But it's not all about the art itself. It's also about the creator's journey, as Justine discusses the significance of errors and the transformative potential they hold within the creative odyssey. Here's our conversation with Justine Amard. So, Justine, I wanted to start by asking you, did you grow up in Paris?
No, I grew up in the middle of France, in the city called Clermont-Ferrand, which is in the middle of France. It's a volcanoes area, so it's a very beautiful region. I was born and grew up there.
When did you first come into contact with art?
I think I always had been interested into art because I always wanted to create things since my childhood. I was drawing paintings and I wanted to invent things, create forms. So it always had been with me. And I was seeing exhibitions and I was seeing a lot of different things. I was very curious. I started to learn how to read really young. And yeah, I was really interested into creating new things.
So when did you decide that being an artist was something that you wanted to do as a career?
I think it was quite natural that I never thought about doing something else. It was always in me, so I always wanted to do something related with creation. I think I was not pushed in this direction by my professors and by my school education because I had really good grades and I was smart and they thought I would be more helpful into another, I don't know, job. And my professors were pretty upset with my choices and it was difficult because sometimes when the education is pushing you into another direction, but I was in a high school dedicated to visual art and art history. And after I graduated, I entered the art school. So it was quite natural for me to choose this path, but I didn't know what it would mean to be a professional artist. This was really unknown, and I started to learn about it when I graduated and when I started to do exhibitions by my home. So it was a quite a natural path. But at the same times, I'm also working a lot with theaters, with living arts. I was also dancing, singing. I was playing music for 15 years. So I chose finally visual art, but in my heart, I always wanted to do something which was kind of total to combine all different forms of art. But I realized that there is no school for that. So I would have loved to continue dancing and music, but at some point I had to make choices. But still, somehow, it's still appearing into my artwork. So yeah.
It's interesting that you say that because that's one of the things I wanted to ask you about is the fact that you use all of these different components in your art. Yes, you're a visual artist, but you've done installations that have music, that have physical movement, photography. Is this something that you have kind of developed over the course of your career as a need to get something out of yourself? Or it kind of feels like you're almost exercising a demon.
No, that's true that I was always experimenting with different mediums, and I got really frustrated when I entered art school because everything was a little bit formatted. Like I had drawing class, painting class, video class, and I felt really that it was not my path. So I started to disrupt the process by making images with other ways of making images and to push back the borders of images. And for example, I started to really dive into 3D, into programming. It was quite difficult because at that time I didn't have a lot of knowledge into technology, and it was really, in France, it's very separate. Like when you study in an art school, it's an autonomous art school and you are not connected to other departments, that there are no other departments. It's only one art school alone. So I really felt I needed to open my vision. So I started to meet other people, and at some point I was working with people which were not related to art at all. And all my friends, they were in music fields, they were experimenting with softwares. All the people around me, they were having some kind of startups or starting some kind of a business in technology. And I felt really good in this kind of different environment, but always connected to my practice. And it was a way for me to push the idea of the traditional medium and to see what was beyond. So to start to experiment with programming, with video games, and the first installation I did after the school was a video game. It was really interesting, and at that time it was not so easy for people to see digital medium as art. So I had a lot of conflict with galleries, art spaces, museum that I was not able to show some of my work in France, but my first exhibitions were in Norway or Brazil or in different countries, and I started to feel like, okay, maybe there is a scene for this kind of different art, and I continue to push it.
Okay, so it seems like pushing envelopes is very much within your tradition and your practice. You know, even from school, they're pushing you in one direction, you're pushing in another. In art school, they're guiding you in one direction, you're pushing the boundaries out. In the art scene in France, you're pushing the boundaries out. That could be really hard. How do you kind of deal with that on a day-to-day when you're constantly like fighting against, you know, the tradition and building your own path? Because that could be also very lonely.
I mean, in art, it's difficult to feel the community because all the artists are doing different things and different processes, and they all have different ateliers, studios. And it's not like in the living art where everybody gather in a theater to do a collective work. So by definition, the practice of the artist is very lonely. But it's more difficult maybe when you hear so many times people telling you that what you're doing is not art, and they have their own definition of art. So yeah, I felt sometimes maybe I felt frustrated, or but at the same time, it's giving me more power to continue. And for example, I always transform my failure into something which will push me to succeed the next time. I started to give up on having this traditional path into art and to appreciate the unique way of what I'm doing, and to really change my mindset to bring me to maybe go into unknown territories, but sometimes to just to do what I want to do and not to follow a trend or not to follow a path because it's easy. So I think I always had been like this, and I like the challenge. What I prefer in what I do is this moment of creation when I build something, when the ideas are merging all together, when I brainstorm with some people, engineers, and we find the idea and we develop it and we put it together into materials and displays. I think this is the most beautiful thing about creation. It's when it's ongoing and all this energy ongoing. So yeah, it's all about what I like to do and how I find this kind of balance and happiness in what I do.
You mentioned that you started connecting with individuals outside of the art scene, and that started kind of impacting or maybe having an impact on your art and kind of pushed you to do something more creative, something different. And I wanted to ask you about that and the use of technology in your art, because that's something that's a theme that goes back to like your very first installation, which you mentioned was, you know, a video game, which at the time was not something that was common. I mean, now, yes, but, you know, in 2010, not so much. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, technology and how that has maybe impacted or maybe even changed the way that you approach creation?
I was really inspired by, there was a woman who came in my art school to teach a 3D lab, and then she was creating objects for video games, especially this kind of historical object for video games, like the video game Egypt, for example, which is so old now, you know, this CD video games. For me, it was kind of really inspiring, because it was really weird to see that you could make a game online talking about art history, and her job was really particular to make 3D models of that object. And I thought, wow, that's so nice to have such a job, but at the same time, it was totally like a virtual thing. And I started to think about reality. What is reality? Is it something that we can touch, which is tangible, or is it something that you can produce, which will have a different life and a different form of reality, like a simulation of the reality? And I really start to enjoy to think about those different approaches and about simulations. And at that time, I asked to be connected to a virtual reality center in my hometown. They were developing 3D environments. They were having a cave. They were having the first VR headset. At that time, everything was so new. It was very experimental, but I really thought, okay, this is it. I started to code, to train myself, and for 1 year I was just in a kind of residence to observe, to help them on the project, but also to start to make my own project. And this is how I discovered augmented reality. And so I made my first installation with augmented reality in 2011. And at that time, there was no front cameras on the iPads. So I needed to wait the iPad 2 to be released to be able to show my work, because before that we were renting some kind of tablet. So it was really, for me, fascinating to be in advance before the technology was released. And I really enjoyed that. I had a lot of troubles with people who didn't understand, or people who got too fascinated by the medium and they were not seeing the work for the work itself. But of course, there was this magical thing about discovering a new way of seeing images. And I always connect with scientists, developers. What I like the most is to share our visions of the world. And in 2016, I started to really dive into Japanese robotics. And for me, it was another deep layer of working between realities and simulations of human lives. Yeah, I discovered the field of artificial life, how you can work with existing system in the natures, how you can work with observing bees, observing humans, and try to mimic the behaviors to generate some kind of software and to embody them into new way of embodying and embodiment. And I continued my path really naturally. And I think this is how I build also my thinking, by not just being into the art world that sometimes is very limited or very trendy, but to go out of it and to speak to other people. And today in my life, I'm very happy because I have some For example, archaeologists around me, but also neurosurgeons, and this is people that I really work with them on a month basis. That I always meet, and we share ideas. We work together. We make some talk. They ask me to, for example, illustrate some publications, and this is nice to also, as an artist, be more connected to the world you're living in, because sometimes I feel artists have this big idea of changing the world, but also that is very hard and this is very ambitious. And what you can change is the vision in the cell of your own work, or in the vision of the people in the cell, in the scale of your own practice and installation and art. And that's important to really connect with the people around you. For some people I know, their work and their decisions, it's a question of life or death. When you're a neurosurgeonist and you perform the surgery on someone, it's not just about being good or practicing, it's just about sometimes how your choices will impact the life of the death of someone. And when you start to meet this kind of people, you really realize how your practice and how their practice and how everything could be connected and generate this flow of life and death, and how things are important but not sometimes vital. And yeah, this is what I like also, that the fact that I always can enter into different worlds which are not my world, but where I can always find something as a source of inspiration or connection for my art.
Over the course of your career, looking at the installations and the work that you've done, it's very varied. Like there's clearly like a through line, and there are like periods of time where there's, you know, themes, but there's a flow to it. And it seems quite natural, but also when you think about it, maybe not so natural. And I'm curious about, like, you know, where do you find inspiration? Clearly some of it is from, you know, the individuals that you associate with and people that you meet. And some of it is also like, you know, robotics. How did you actually come across that? Like, are you always looking through books, or is it TV, or is it like just the world around you? What inspires you?
Inspiration, I think, is not something that you can control. I think it's more coming to you. Sometimes I'm stuck on some project. When I analyze, I see why I'm stuck. And I think there is a kind of a combination between environment, what is your surroundings, how is your environment, and how you choose to be influenced by this environment, including what are you seeing on the web, what people you're following on the social network, and how this environment, virtual, digital, but also in the real life, is really feeding you. But also there is something you can't control about how your brain sometimes will create new connections. I learned over time to trust myself that things are also really coming to me. And this is something that it's hard to explain, because I would say that I wanted to be artist because not because I choose, but because I needed. And there is something beyond my decisions, which are the need to create, the need to make something, the need to think together with people. So I think it's very this kind of balance between the things you provoke by your surroundings and the uncontrollable inspiration which is coming to you. That's interesting, because sometimes you think you're doing something new. This time I will do a new piece, totally new. I stop with all this old stuff that I'm dealing with. I start a new way in my work, but in the end you realize you're doing the same thing again. This is interesting. When you reread your artwork, sometimes you're like, okay, finally, I'm always doing the same things, but it seems that people are not still realizing it. But for me, it's kind of the same. So yeah, I would say it's patterns that I am obsessed with, patterns which are coming to me, and sometimes generating new things. But I would say it's about the surroundings, the environment, and ideas coming to me.
Do you actively change or push yourself to explore different things that you're not familiar with or you're not comfortable with in order to expand your network?
I think I like to be into some environment where I don't understand anything, and it happens a lot. But at the same time, yeah, I like to explore and I like to have a lot of experiences, and it's feeding a lot my art. And yeah, to give maybe a clear example, right now I am exhibiting in this exhibition at the Louvre in Lens. So the Louvre organized an exhibition about the, how do you say, the monde souterrain, which are the underground worlds. So the exhibition is retracing this path from mythology to the caves, to the war, to the death and after death, and after coming back to life again. Reliving and the plants and how the plants are growing and how artists use this imagination of the underground to create new work. And that was interesting because I started to realize that, for example, I go into the catacombs in Paris to explore that I had been exhibiting into very deep undergrounds. And I was fascinated by prehistorical caves and how sometimes all this imagination of a particular display is feeding. And that's interesting because when I talked to the curators, I realized that I had a lot of experiences with undergrounds in all the undergrounds I visited, but also in all my interest for what it's generating for people. And of course, with all this philosophy myth of the cave with Platon and all the connection with images and the origin of images. So yeah, sometimes it's just I'm quite curious also to explore the places that I don't know, and even if it's forbidden and illegal, totally illegal things, it's very inspiring to try not to stay in your comfort, but to sometimes say yes to things that you're not familiar with.
Can you walk us through, one of your pieces and how that sort of came together? Because I'm curious about how you go from like the initial idea to selecting what your final artwork is going to look like. Like, how do you decide that it's going to be a video installation, or perhaps it's a combination of, video and photographs and sound? And AI, like, can you kind of walk us through the process of how it goes from initial idea to final concept?
It's difficult to think about one unique process for my work. I mean, it depends of the project, it depends of the frames, and it depends of what I find. I love to work by experimenting as a scientist to define some kind of experimental moment, to select them and to build on it. But I'm also very sensitive to unexpected things. I mean, it's sometimes you're searching for something and something else will appear, and this is the work. And I think I was maybe talking about it at the Night of Ideas last time in Vancouver, that I was saying that error sometimes is the most beautiful thing. When you have a bug, when your system is not working, it generates some kind of unpredictable things. And I have a friend saying we have to celebrate the bug, which means we have to welcome it because it's part of the process. And sometimes what you create is so boring, but suddenly a bug appears and you're like, this is it. And that's how all the aesthetics of the glitches appears into digital world. It's how the dripping in paintings, all these kind of unexpected things, which are really interesting because sometimes it's bringing more life into the process, more disturbance. I think I'm able to listen to the world and sometimes to welcome those beautiful misunderstandings, those beautiful mistakes to create something else. And I think it happens a lot in my process. And I was telling my student the other day also that she was really brave because when you plan to do a project that you write the script, you write everything, after it's important to allow yourself to destroy and rebuild everything. And I was telling a lot my student and speaking a lot with them about that. Sometimes you think the process is so fixed, but actually it's not until the last moment and until the moment you choose, in fact. And I told her, you're super brave because you don't hesitate to make renovation works into your film and into your project. And she was like, yes, it's a lot of work. I'm working a lot. I have a lot of projects, a lot of research, and a lot of try attempt, failure. But it's important not to rush, to take the time to do things and to really find the way to make them. And I mean, for me, it's always different. What I would say is that I always have a kind of a maybe idea of the process, and this process will create the work. And for me, this is the most important, how the process will generate the work, that maybe in the end you have the work which is done, but it's not like, I mean, when you need to fix things, sometimes it's a little bit frustrating. So I would say that mostly I work with processes, but I allow myself to destroy and rebuild them. And maybe sometimes it's totally shifting when I discover a new thing or where a bug is appearing, and that's good in the frame of what's possible, of the technology, of the budget, of everything. And sometimes it's kind of a balance and equation. If you want your project to be possible, you have to make some concession. And now we have also this big ecological thing that we have to be careful, and which is that everybody has to contribute. All this context is always the frame of the work, which is really important to remind as well. Because the artwork cannot be dissociated from its context. This is the base of art history.
One of the things you mentioned is this concept that sometimes you have to make the decision that that's the artwork. Like the process could go on indefinitely, but at some point you have to stop. Is it hard to sometimes, have to stop when you know that, well, maybe I could go just a little further?
Yeah, sometimes it's breaking your heart. Sometimes you know when the work is here and you realize, and it's perfectly illustrating the way to work with a generative AI. If you train your model, you generate thousands of images and you dive into this latent space and you see all those images, which are making no sense because the AI is just computation of noise of pixels. But it makes sense for the viewer, for the human who has the knowledge and who has this knowledge of art history. So sometimes when you dive into it, you find the image, and this is it. And this is it because some kind of sensitive feeling, because of your knowledge, because of what you're looking into it. So I would say most of the time, you know, when the work here, you find the image. And I have to say, for me, it happens quite often that I am surprised by what I see. And because I am surprised, I think, okay, this is it. This is the work, this is the final work, this is the image I want to push for my work. So it's, of course, it's endless. And all the processes I am dealing with, artificial intelligence, experimenting with robots, with machine, with programming, light programming, sound, I could do it forever. But at the same time, it's endless, it's a cost of energy, it's a cost of materials. It's sometimes easier when you have a strong concept which is helping you to fix things, but to leave the time which is necessary, and sometimes to leave the process also resting a little bit and to come with fresh eyes, which is very important, and to come back. It's like writing. When you write a text, when you write an essay for your work, sometimes you're super happy about what you wrote, but it's 3 a.m. in the morning, and when you read it the next morning, you're like, oh no. That's the same for the art. It's always a new discovery and it's always a new territory on each artworks. I'm also teaching my students and myself sometimes to learn not to be discouraged or not to hate the artwork because the process can be so difficult that you start to hate what you're doing. And every time someone is asking you to exhibit this artwork, you're so sad and you don't like, and I have to say some artworks, I don't like them very much. And when people are asking me to exhibit them, I'm like, are you sure? Maybe I have another work because it's not like something I want to remember or. And this is how you discover that finally you create something which is a different entity coming out of yourself. Maybe it's too strong to compare it to a child, but it's like a new thing which is coming out of yourself, which will have its own life, especially if the museum is buying the work. It's their work, they do whatever they want with it, and it's not your work anymore, and they can destroy it if they want, and that's scary. It's like giving birth. But at the same time, after COVID or during the lockdown in France, I had my work exhibited by the festival Electra in South Korea. So this is a festival from Montreal. They asked me to exhibit my work in South Korea, and I was stuck in home in my home in France. And it was a Canadian festival asking me to exhibit my work in South Korea, and it was in very beautiful screens. And they were sending me videos of the work, and I felt really moved. Like, okay, my work now is autonomous to travel in the world. I don't need to be there. And I was really moved and happy to see that even if we were stuck at home and we had no future at this moment, the work could be autonomous and still continue to travel and to be seen, unless you're grounded at home. So yeah, that's something you discover by being an artist.
For a lot of people, when we think of artists and art, we think of a very solitary being. You know, you're in a room with your materials creating. But for you, it sounds like, you know, art is also very interactive and a very collaborative experience. Has it always been like that? It sounds like it has.
It's true that, for example, in France, it's still very common to have this image of the poet, poor poet in his room making great poetry. And it's kind of people pushing you into this myth. For me, it's very boring. And I was doing a lot of music, as I said, and I was always used to playing the orchestra with many people. And I thought that I don't want this. I don't want to stay alone in my studio every day and just to be here. So I started to find some tricks to involve people with me, which is a way for me not to be alone, but also to have some collaborators. And I like to take this example, for example, of the cave paintings that I've been doing this work about the Chauvet Cave, which is one of the oldest cave where we found like those drawings from prehistory. And when you talk to the scientists of the cave, they are telling you that it's impossible that only one person did those drawings. So the men and the women of the caves, they were like several of them, because sometimes you have this kind of rocks where they were standing to reach a certain level on the wall. That it was impossible without someone getting their legs or having their back to stabilize them. And that's super interesting to see that already since the prehistory, art was a kind of collective thing. Also, one lesson we could learn from prehistory is that it was not only cave paintings, but there was also music. So there was some kind of remains of music instruments, for example, lithophones, and it's a proof that it was not just a question of visual, but also like music, and also when you come with the fire, all the paintings are moving because of the flames. So it was something really, I think, immersive. And today, when you think about the process of being an artist. I think that's the same. If you want to reach a certain level of using technology in your work, you need some kind of competence. And now I'm showing a work where I connect the brains of 12 people from the audience to a big display to generate visual and sounds. And this project wouldn't be possible without neuroscientists involved in the project, without people who would be able to help me to sort the data, to treat the data, to really labelize the signal into the things I wanted to get from the brains. So this project is a perfect example because I am not a neuro data scientist. I'm not a neuroscientist. I have a knowledge. I have the competence to analyze the work and to build it and to connect it. But of course, it's something really interesting to connect the knowledge of the other people into the work to make it stronger. That's really interesting because this is also how you think the concept of the work and how you reinforce the concept of the work into the time you're living in. And especially today, working with brain technology is something super interesting. It had like a lot of progress had been made. And when you follow the news and you see that Elon Musk implants some people with this kind of chip, and it's crazy because it's something which is also questioning what we want to do for our lives and for our humanity. And for me, it was an evidence to work with different people on my projects, and it's not just a solo practice in my studio. I mean, it's a way to connect to the world and to make the work also more sharp into the world we are living in.
Building on this concept of collaboration, you've done some very, very interesting practices where you were like embedded in different areas, like artists in residence. Are there any that are particularly memorable for you, or is there one that was more sort of like exciting for you than all the rest that kind of stands out as a key memory?
I think one of the latest, it's not really a residence because, I mean, most of the time I'm building my own residence. I'm not waiting for a kind of application from the government, but most of the time I'm really going forward and trying to ask people, even if I have to finance myself. And one of the latest experience, which is, I don't know if I can call it a residence, but it was really kind of disturbing but super fascinating thing is like when I went into to a brain surgery operation to record the sound of the neurons. So for me, it was a really strong moment. I was invited by the neurosurgeon since a long time to come, and we made it. And I was really naive because I thought I would stay in a separate room, but she said, no, you're coming with me to the surgery room. So I had to leave all my clothes. I have to wash my hands. I had to like wear the equipment. I brought my cameras, my microphones. I have to disinfect everything and bring them to me in the room. And she performed the surgery just in front of me, showing me like everything, explaining everything to me. And it was crazy because it was I was really realizing, oh, I'm seeing a living brain, a brain in motion, which is something most of the people can't see. So it was very beautiful, very scientific because she explained everything very well to me, all the actions she was doing. And when she started to put those electrodes of stimulation, of deep stimulation in the brain, I was able to recall from my mic the sound of the neurons. And it was really beautiful moment, but at the same time, I was like, wow, it's super intense. I never thought I could live something like this in my life. And that was a great experience because working with a artificial neural network, I started to work with living neural network and to record this sound. And also I shot images with my cameras. And And for me, it's a whole thinking about all my projects, how I can connect artificial intelligence with human intelligence, with plant intelligence, and how this become a unique material to think about the world and not to think only about the machine and the digital. So yeah, it was crazy, and I think I will come back soon to record over material and to push the work with her. One interesting thing also, it was after I made the work and after I had been with her in the surgery, I had been invited by the hospital for a fundraising. I was invited to speak in front of the people for the fundraising and to help to raise money for the research on the brain. And I told them, honestly, thank you so much because we never have such opportunities being artists to help with the advance of the medicine, the advance of the health. And this was very important for me to be able also to give something back, to be part of this fundraising. And they raised a lot of money that day and they were super happy. And I was really happy. I was just coming for a talk and being able to help them. So it's always in my relations with scientists, a kind of really strong exchange. And I think this is important that it's not just artists illustrating the practice of the scientists with beautiful ways, or not the artist taking the advantage of the technology to make a work, but it's really this kind of common research and common path to work together and to invent things together. And I'm really happy that all the scientists I collaborated with, I didn't make only one project. It was always like a continuous flow of making works. And it's a mutual trust. And that's great sometimes to see that your video work is shown in a museum, but sometimes it's shown in a conference about robotics and artificial life. And it's an artwork, but it's also an experimental science experiment. So I like this idea of the artwork as a frontier of different fields, which can help a global community of humans to do something together.
You mentioned something that I thought was really interesting, this idea that, it's not just one work, it's continuous, like you continually do work. Do you usually work on like one piece at a time, or are you working on multiple projects at the same time?
I'm working on multiple projects at the same time. I think people are really scared sometimes because they always tell me you have too many projects. But this is how I connect my ideas. And I have to say, it's very risky, but at the same time, it's the way I function in the fact that when I move on with a project, I move on with the other one and with the other one. But when I'm stuck in a project, it's a kind of chain and nothing is working and it's kind of depressed time. It's how I like to work. Sometimes it helps me to move on, and when I found an idea into a work, it reflects in another work. And for me, it makes also the coherence of the work. So yeah, I have multiple projects at the same time. Now I'm working on this exhibition for the World Expo for the French Pavilion. I am the artistic director to direct the whole path of the visitors. But at the same time, I'm making a new project, which is a video game. I'm also making new sculptures. I have a project with a very specific brain laboratory. They are dealing with the exchange between blood and brain and how all this circulate in the body. I have my teaching. I have some projects with live performance. And yeah, I like it. I like to be able also sometimes to forget about one project, to focus on another one and come back to this one and to jump from one project one day, another project the other day. And then this is how I find my balance and how I move on.
You mentioned earlier that you work all the time. It's part of being an artist, but how do you disconnect? How do you find that you need to disconnect at some point?
I think I'm disconnecting in my sleep. Not totally because I'm working a lot with dreams and I'm exploring a lot with my dreams. I read an article quite recently about this refugee sleep, which is the idea of when you're too much depressed, you sleep a lot to forget about your life. I feel I love to sleep because I really disconnect from my life and from my hard work. But also, it's a source of inspiration, which is amazing. But I mean, of course, I'm responsible. I take a rest when I need to take a rest. And I love to do other things. I love to sometimes to do really opposite things to what I'm used to, and to spend time with my family and my friends. And it's very important to know your limits. And it's good to work. I love my work and everything I do it for myself. I'm building my life by working. So of course it's endless. But at the same times, you go out with your friends and you start to speak to someone you don't know, and you will connect and you will find new ways of saying things. And sometimes it's so you cannot disconnect your brain and you the fact that you're an artist, and the fact that it's your name is connected to your art and to your life, and you're one individual. So it's never like you can disconnect from everything. But at the same times, I like to really dive into other things. And I like to move, to be in motion, and I think it's very important also to take care of your, for example, mental health or your happiness. And I'm telling a lot of my students that if you decide to be an artist, you have to find the path of happiness in your work, and it's not about working to be famous or working to reach things. Or no, it's working to find the balance of your happiness in your life, and it's very important to consider the pleasure of doing what you're doing. And I think that's really something which needs to be preserved, and not to bring yourself into this kind of a burnout of different projects. So it's important to say no. It's important to choose what you're doing, and to also respect your values. This is so important, never to sell your values for the attraction of collaborating with a bigger amount of money, because in the end, it's more about what you will leave on earth, and what you will maybe tell your kids, or what you will defend. And money is not important. You can always make money, and when you need it, you make it. But it's all about being fair with your value and what you are.
What do you hope will come of your work, in 30, 40, 50 years? What's your hope for the legacy that you leave behind?
I think the world will decide for me, especially it's how things will evolve and how people will read the art back. Because this is the thing with art history, you never know what will stay in the art history, and what will vanish. But what I like to think when I create works is how you can preserve it to be seen after your death or after in the future. So for example, when you create softwares, how people will be able to visualize it with the technology. And this is a very interesting point, because France has a great collection of art. There is this National Center for Visual Art, which is one of the oldest art collection in the world. They are super ancient and they preserve art since a very long time. And now what happens with digital technologies? Because when you create a software, or everything will evolve. So I love to think about this preservation thing. And I started to really work on the protocols of my work. So for example, when the museum is buying my work, I'm really doing protocols about the maintenance, about the electronic, about the code of how to preserve and different degrees of preservation. And there are different degrees because maybe one day your artwork will disappear. So you have to prevent it by maybe realizing a great movie about your work in with some people, and especially for interaction, to have a kind of testimony, a legacy of what was the work. And so I don't have a particular hope because I feel the future will choose for me, but at least I think it's very interesting to think about this preservation of digital art. And it's not because it's digital that it's ephemeral. It can be something very important which will stay and that people will remind. It's a challenge today to be able to make the institutions thinking of how to preserve digital art, especially because we are always asked as artists to produce new work, to produce a new piece, and what is your next work? And people are always searching for new things. But I think French artists are really good to invent things, and they were really good pioneers into different fields of emerging art and technology. But they don't have the resources to recompute, to preserve the work. And we have some great examples like Christa Sommerer and Laurent Mignono. They reprogram all their work for their solo show at the ZKM. So they make this big jump in time. Okay, this work, we made the concept and the original version in 1996, but this is the version of 2016. And I think this is super interesting to think about the life and death of the artwork and how you reprogram it and you regenerate it. So it's inventing also new ways of the life of the artwork, how you reprogram, how it's preserved. So I don't know how my art will be preserved and what I will leave on the earth, but I really enjoy to preserve and to work on the documentation of the work to be able to give a proper document. And at least I find it's very enjoyable to think about all of this and may be helpful for also the artistic community to share on this and to be able to talk and to push it to the government and to the cultural decision, like please help us to preserve our own works because as artists we don't have the resources. And please help the museum to continue the preservation. And if we are able to preserve works, we are able to preserve the memory. And it's very important.
What is the next frontier for Justine? What for you, what is your next big step, do you think?
It's quite fascinating because I worked with brain since 2018 with my own brain, and after I worked with the astronaut brains, and I think it's kind of endless to work with how things are appearing and how the human body function and how this functionality can push you forward. And I don't know what is the next frontier, but I think there are so many things that we don't know about ourselves that I would like con to continue to push into this idea of the idea of an artwork dealing with immersion can come from inside your imagination. So I would say by approaching the world of mental images into my work, the images, the inside images, which are not like possible to read in the brain, but how could it be possible to imagine something and to give it a materiality? So I think the next step is really to continue to work on the signal from the brain and to be able to give it more shape and more content, and to be able to make it evolve to new images and to the world of immersion. I'm really continuing to push forward to the discovery of the brain and how I can get inspired by the nature and the computation, and how to create new ways of computing with all of that. But yeah, the great thing is that I don't know what is the next frontier.
And that was our conversation with visual artist Justine Aimard. You can find out more about Justine's work on her website at justineaimard.com.
The Sparkcast is a production of the Spark Computer Graphics Society. Opening and closing credits by Michael Edlin. Editing and additional production support by Joshua Peterman. For more about SparkCG and our upcoming events, visit sparkcg.org.